the Greedles!
All right, well, welcome back to the Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
As you can hear, Brian and I are in separate areas tonight here on the Glue Guys. Brian.
Mike, I got a story for you, but I never told you how my internet went out, by the way. So as you can probably hear, I'm calling in from the phone, which is even less quality than we're used to from our usual Skype setup. And the reason for that is, Mike, is because my cat peed on the internet. That's a true story. My cat. I have two cats, wow. And one is getting very old and is just like starting to lose it and pees now suddenly. In the last couple of weeks, started peeing on stuff, which she never did. Lily, she's the sweetest cat in the whole world. But yeah, couldn't keep it together and peed when I got home and it had cooked. You know, like as the modem gets pretty hot or the router or whatever. And it was a pretty bad scene, Mike. It was like someone was making cat pee fritters on my living room floor.
So what did the modem look like? I mean, what did it fizzle?
It looked like it was covered in cooked cat pee. No, it wasn't. It didn't work. It already like shorted out or whatever. So it was just non-responsive. So, and I told the guy, so I called the cable company today, or the time or Spectrum, I call them Spectrum now, Mike. And I was like, hey, so I want to come and like get a new router. He's like, yeah, you got to bring your old one. I was like, yeah, the thing about that is I'll be pretty ashamed to bring this in because it's covered in hot cat pee. And he's like, nah, they don't mind. I was like, all right. He's like, it's bad, huh? He's like, yeah. It's bad. But yeah, so that's the story of why I'm on the phone right now with you.
So we are the Glue Guys, and you can find us in all the special places you normally find shows like us. I also I feel like we haven't really nailed down the Dash Radio thing.
Nail that down, would you?
So you can find us. So depending on how you're listening to us, you could be listening to us on Dash Radio 9 a.m. and noon on Wednesdays, at least for now. So if you're listening to us on a Wednesday live, that's what you're hearing. And of course you can subscribe to the podcast at Almighty Baller Network, iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere else our show can be found. But, so we are on Dash Radio, which is an internet radio service. We're part of we've referenced the Almighty Baller Network, almightyballer.com. Brian, this is a Brian business connection, I would say. You set this up.
I'm wheeling and dealing, like, you know, man, I got my head in a swivel.
And of course you can find us at netsdaily.com, which we are always on every time we do a podcast. So we're sort of all over the map here.
Netsdaily, anyway.
But Dash Radio is fun. I was listening to it, our network. What's interesting about our network, it's such a colorful cast of characters.
Really?
Basically, like each show is mostly about a single team. But then there's national ones,
one of the most interesting is Lakers Film Room. Did you ever listen to this one?
I wanted to dig into that one. You explain it a bit.
They go into like history. It's basically like it's a Lakers podcast, but they, you know, they'll tell stories about like, you know, the Wilt Chamberlain years and stuff and like go deep on the history of the team, which I always thought was really interesting.
So, I mean, it's a good listen if you're just like, I need that NBA content. This is a perfect time of the year to sort of listen to it because you're going to be able to get perspectives from a lot of the teams in the playoffs, just like straight fan perspectives. It's pretty interesting stuff, and mostly it's good. We're the best, I would say. I think.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair.
Brian.
Talk to me, Mike. Speaking of the best, let's talk about the Nets.
The best foreign point guard in the best point guard.
Oh yeah. So the one big thing that we wanted to launch in on, and this was queued up by our friends in Nets Daily. Shout out to cheer boy Robert Windrum. I don't have my proper mail drops, unfortunately, but thanks for your mail as always. And this is something that I wanted to talk about anyhow, but we've been noticing in Nets Daily land and in general, just Nets land, this divide, Mike. It's another classic Nets Daily divide, and it's people who are balking at the idea of Milos Teodosic joining the team, and potentially because for varieties, but people either do want him or don't want him. And the people that don't want him because the rumors are that he would only want to play for a team if he were starting on it. That's like the sort of, that's the barrier of entry that they're not comfortable with. Right. And a lot of them happen to also be supporters of your man, Jeremy Lin. And so
surprising.
That's created a whole different, that's another layer to the rift there. The rift onion that we've got growing. Go ahead.
There's a couple of things just to get out straight, is that if you're a Jeremy Lin supporter and you're like super afraid that this European point guard is going to come and take Jeremy's job, then you have a problem.
Yeah, it's time to take a big look, a long, hard look.
No, I mean, so there's been some interesting aspects to this. One, the whole, like, he has to start thing. It's tough for me to believe that he's not, like, a high school recruit, even though that's how they're treating him. Like, it doesn't happen in the NBA that a guy can essentially mandate to start. Like, yeah, I mean, there can be players who are upset by being in bench roles, but to be honest, most of the time these guys, whatever minutes you give them, they just want minutes. They don't care about starting. And Teodosic is going to get... Is it Teodosic? How are we doing this here, Brian? Milos?
Yeah. Yeah, just got it.
Yeah, Teodosic. And so he's going to get... If he's good enough, if he can't get 30 minutes a game on the Nets, then he's not good enough. So I don't really know if that's a problem. What I do find is interesting is that this is... perhaps the most public courtship of a European player we've ever seen. I mean, there's that picture on Nets Daily from, I think, what's the guy's name? David Pick? Is he the European basketball writer who's been following a lot of this? Do you know what I'm talking about, Brian?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, there's a picture. Wait,
is there anybody else courting him except for us? That's my question. Like, are there any other? Who are the other NBA scouts that are vying for his attention, or is it just us versus another year at CSKA? Did you know we talked about this? But for everyone, it's not. I guess it's not pronounced CSKA. It's CSKA.
CSKA. Yeah, and I've been thinking about that. So there's a picture on Nets Daily of Marks and Atkinson sitting courtside watching Milos play, and I think it's the second playoff game he's had against whatever team they're playing in whatever league they're in. And so there's two schools of thought in my own head about that, is that that's a pretty odd thing to be that publicly, like, out front. You know, it's pretty obvious that they're there for him, and it's a pretty odd thing to be that publicly out front. I'm sure there are other places to sit in the stands that are maybe a little bit more discreet, but yet they're sitting, I believe, courtside, or at least front row seats somewhere, watching him play basketball.
I really like those pictures too. I like a picture of a person scouting anyone. I always think, because, like, you know, you're used to seeing pictures of people at NBA games or basketball games with, like, jubilation on their faces, and they have to be like contort their faces into, like, this scrupulous, like, I'm really weighing what I'm seeing here more seriously. Yeah.
The opposite of what Phil Jackson does when he watches basketball.
That's the face I try to make. I try to pretend like I'm a scout. That's what I want people to think when they see me.
Because you want people to believe you're seeing something that only you can see.
Yes.
You want to have that
seeing
look.
The basketball geometry, laid out differently than everybody else.
Yeah, you're looking for the way he moves his hips slightly on that screen. That's the key that's going to unlock
shoulders.
Everything.
I'm just looking at shoulder length. You know me, I'm a shoulders guy.
Well, you could just watch free throw line footage, and I think that would properly scout everyone.
When in reality, I'm getting shot with t-shirt cannons and dying.
I just think it's odd of how public this is. It's not like. I don't know. It's not like we're seeing leaks in the press in the New York Post or wherever that the Nets are definitely going to get this guy. But, like, we're pretty much seeing that. And we're seeing them specifically watch this guy to play basketball, both They thought it was important enough for the GM and the head coach to both go there together to watch this one dude play basketball. I think Trajan Langdon, the assistant GM, has also been there to watch him play basketball. You would only do that, like, very few times are players scouted and they get both that kind of treatment. I don't know if it's some, like, I'm almost thinking some kind of smoke screen of some kind. It's like, it's some diversion.
They're sent up that Shabazz Muhammad smoke screen.
Well, that's what's also, so where did that come from? That rumor? That was from a Minnesota reporter, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You think that, that Shabazz's agent is putting this out there?
That's a strange, I mean, it's a strange rumor overall, just because also, have you watched Shabazz Muhammad play basketball?
Not in a while.
It's not, it's sort of Sean Kilpatrick-y. I mean, it's sort of just like kind of a gunner, just a guy who's going to get his, doesn't make anyone else really that much better. I don't really remember his 3-point stats, but I don't think they're all that great.
When I was looking at stuff for, Teodesic today, I wanted to find out when, Arvydas Sabonis was drafted, just cause I had assumed it was, and it's about 31, I think. But I looked up Teodosic and I was like, wait, he's not old. He was born in 1987. I was born in 1987. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's ancient.
Yeah,
we're super old.
Oh my God, I'm not going to make it to the NBA. Oh no.
You don't think it's going to happen for you?
I mean, my time is running out. You know, if the European guards are having a hard time getting in at 30.
Can I be honest? I've been looking... I always think I'm like, I've always just been taught improperly. Like, that's what I've always hung my hat on, is that whether it was math or basketball, I was never taught the fundamentals.
Yeah.
So what I've been doing lately is that instead of just throwing a ball at a hoop, I actually been looking at the hoop, and it's been going in, Brian.
Yeah, a lot more.
And I feel like there's something there. I feel like there's an NBA player inside of me if I just had some proper training. I'm just I'm on the cusp. The
Hoosier era-esque line of advice is to look at the back of the rim. You want to look at the back of the rim. There's an old joke in golf that's applicable, but it's like over 90% of short putts don't go in. Sort of the deal with basketball too.
So Milo, I mean.
You like that one?
Yeah, no, like I do like that. Huh? I like that one.
Yeah, it's good.
I love the Milos debate though. And he's become almost a cult hero.
So give me your
gets here.
Yeah, give me your hot take. I mean, I know where you stand. I know where you stand. But can you sympathize with the people that have reservations about, you know, veering way off into basketball experimentation next year? You know, like, a lot of the people that are taking issue with the Teodosic thing really want to see LeVert move to the two instead of the three. Presumably want Rondé to play the three in LeVert's stead, which there was an article on Nets Daily a couple of days ago about, you know, Rondé Hollis Jefferson's resurgence at the four, which I think it's hard to deny that, you know, that's in the brand of basketball that we've been playing towards the end of the season, like, really suited him well at the four. You know, hard to argue against that.
Yeah, I mean, the best basketball of his career came at the end of this season, and it was because he was playing the four. I think it would be, unless if he suddenly develops a 3-point shot, it'd be crazy to consider him anything but a power forward now. To be honest, I mean, he's better at that. That he's a better player at that position.
Here's the thing: in both of these instances, there's like a considerable shakeup. You know, like moving in one case, you're moving basically. Well, I don't know. It's not that much of a shakeup because Randy Foy has been playing the two, and so if you put Teodosic at the two or like 1.5, and have him and Jeremy Lin run a kind of awkward combo guard game. That's like kind of what we've already been doing, so it's more of a natural fit.
Yeah, and like, I love the idea of I've always loved the idea of having two legitimate ball handlers on the floor at the same time, especially now that Brook can shoot the three.
Can you think of a team that actually did that successfully? Like, I mean, like Phoenix has gone through 100 really good point guards and never really with the exception of that one 50-win year that like came out of nowhere, like haven't been able to translate all those amazing point guards into anything meaningful, you know?
Yeah, but I think I don't know. This is maybe just an absolute generalization, but there's something about European basketball. I mean, you see it in the Olympics all the time, is that these guys, they're more flexible in what they're able to do, and they're used to playing with two ball handlers on the floor. There's very much less like Chris Paul mentality in Europe. There's not just like, mm-hmm. I have the ball and I control the entire team. It's more of like, if you get the ball, you can make multiple decisions with it, or you can pass it off to the next guy who may make multiple decisions. Where in America, it's just sort of like, whoever has the ball, like John Wall, Chris Paul, like you run the entire show. You're the entire conductor. You play every piece of the band, basically. I
never thought I'd hear the day where you were being prejudiced against American basketball players, Mike, and I'm frankly a little put off.
I don't know. I just think it's hilarious that if anyone's concerned that Jeremy Lin is going to be like suddenly blown off the map because they bring in this European. I mean, we also have to slow our roll on Teodosic, or however you say his name, is that like there's a reason why he was in Europe until he was 30, like, or 31, or however old he's going to be when he comes over here. There's a reason.
March 19th, so he's going to be 30 for the most of the season next year.
It would be extremely rare if he is, let's say, a little bit better than above average. Like, he's going to be, the hope for him is that he is average, because average mm-hmm. would help this team a lot. Like, if he's just like, I don't know what player comparison would be, but like somewhat better than like Jose Calderon at his best.
See, this is why I was looking at Arvydas Sabonis, is because like, obviously for the obvious reasons, European guy that came over in late in their career, comparatively, and he had a lot of, you know, amazing years. So, I mean, obviously it's a totally different, completely different player. I mean, in every possible way.
Well, yeah, and that was a different era. I mean, that would be like,
right, Mike. Yeah, I know.
It's that'd be like comparing era. Like, I mean, I don't want to go, but like baseball before they broke the color barrier, essentially. I mean, there was a continental barrier in basketball for years where guys just didn't come over, and basketball wasn't a big deal. But so, I mean, it would be like, so the guys you want to compare him to would be like the guy Yavikages, who was like a pacer for like 2 years or something.
I'm trying to endorse your point here, because Sabonis, you know, played very much in the spirit of what you were talking about. Like, he was a 7'3", crazy, even like I would say bulky, kind of fat side. And he was like primarily like a playmaker, you know, like, and like known as much for his razzle dazzle passes as for like, you know, his like mid range jump shots. So, like, you know, obviously I'm trying to fit a, you know, square peg in a circle hole here. But you know, it's, and that's on the far end. Like how many of these have you ever, like how many players from Europe over the age of say, I don't know, let's say just 30, has there been like any others that you can think of? I could just think of Sabonis, and
it's always like, I mean, Pablo Prigioni, right? I mean, like guys Prigioni. Like that, like guys who are just sort of, you know, all right. Okay.
Is Prigioni playing right now? Where is he?
I don't even know. Well, that's the thing. I don't even think he's playing in the NBA at this point. You know, from everything that we're reading, he is going to help as a player, but it's also like this angst that he's going to knock Jeremy Lin off. If he does, that means Jeremy Lin is not any good, which I don't think is the case.
So, but your hot take is that this is just all hot air, this idea that he expects to come in and start. You think that he's going to be comfortable playing for a 25-win team, whatever, coming off the bench?
What I actually think is that I think Sean Marks isn't above creating his own myth a little bit, and to drum up some interest in the team and to kind of play with the fantasy aspect of this, sort of the mystery of European basketball that only he and Trajan Langdon seem to understand, is that they're willing to sort of put this notion out there that there's this special player in Europe that they have a special connection to, and he's going to be somewhat of a savior for this team, and that this mm-hmm. is going to be the Marks regime that international basketball's the inefficiency that they're going to exploit. I think he's I'm not saying he's like has a propaganda police out there putting out all this information about Milos, but I do think there's some sort of like element of like Mark saying like, you know what, like I have no draft picks, so like how am I going to gin up interest in this team and how am I going to kind of create my own myth of a GM? I'm going to act like Europe is just like, I'm just going to be able to get all the nuggets out of Europe, which I don't, again, I think we sort of talked about this. How good can Milos be? Because he's 30 years old and he is in Europe. Most of the time, those guys are already over here, or we really know about them, or they're all like 18-year-olds who are 7'3" and can shoot threes. So I just, I think this is just like, he's getting way too hyped up. But if the Nets get him, I'll be happy. I think we'll know better after the NBA playoffs, because if Milos is like a guy that can really help someone and he wants to come over here to win, any team that needs a backup point guard, like let's say my Wizards or any team really, any team in the top half of the league that needs a backup point guard who can also play with starters, if there's not that much interest in him, then there's probably a good reason that, you know, maybe that just means he's just not that great. Unfortunately,
if our summer looks like, you know, landing our big fish in Teodosic, I guess, and putting Kelly Olynyk and Robert Covington on there and our draft picks, if that's what our summer looks like, that I like that. You know, that's exciting to me.
That's exciting to you?
I mean, it's exciting to me just in like the, you know, protecting the long play. I mean, what else out there? I mean, I'm not getting my hopes up ever again for landing a free agent.
Okay.
I don't think I'll ever do that again.
This is a good game. The game is, what would be the most exciting summer possible for the Nets?
Yeah.
You say it's Kelly Olynyk.
Yeah, and Covington. Not just one. You know, get them both.
But and we sort of want to talk about this, but I think part of an exciting summer would be if like a guy like Harry Giles fell to the Nets and they were able to get him. That would be super exciting.
Yeah. Plus the draft picks, Mike. Come on, I said that. Plus Harry Giles and plus our, you know, our 16-year-old Eurostash.
I think the most what was that? I think the most exciting summer would be if one of those restricted free agents actually comes through. Would be, I mean, I don't believe that Otto Porter should ever be the number one option or the number two option on a team, but like if they could get him or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, that would be the most exciting thing possible, because that means a real NBA player is on this team. I will be disappointed
Sorry, I've got a full 180 on this thing though. I just think of what I've been saying with Tyler Johnson and Alan Crabb this season, and just thinking about what if you gave that guy the keys to the car, you know? And that would be disastrous, I think, at this point, at this juncture. Just a guy that's getting paid abnormally well. Like, we talked earlier in the season about the sort of egalitarian nature of everything. And, yeah, we had the worst record in the league. But, you know, as Mark said, like, we don't want to be the 35-win team in the short term and sacrifice the long term.
No, and I agree.
And I don't know if Otto...
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree that wouldn't be the best thing for this team long term, but it would be exciting to have those guys on this team. More exciting than Trey Covington. I don't think that's the best path, but I think it would be exciting if they got two first round picks, both guys were actually going to play basketball in America next year. That would be more exciting than a stash. And the fact that if they get like a pretty good free agent, I'm not even saying those top two restricted free agents, just like a guy that you like, oh, I actually know who he is, and I believe he can put up 18 points a game. That level of competency. And I don't think, you know, Kelly Olynyk is necessarily that.
I'm talking about replacing Justin Hamilton with Kelly Olynyk. I'm not talking about running out, you know, rolling out the red carpet for Kelly Olynyk, damn it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you love him. You love him. It's okay, Brian.
I actually really don't like to look at Kelly Olynyk. You know, no offense, but
I mean, he'd be a good hair is good Brook Lopez replacement. The hope is,
he reminds me of when I was doing the woofing in Montana. There's a group of like Amish people called God, what the hell? Hooterites? Something like that?
Wow, anyways, that
they, and great. They had. They all kind of looked like Kelly Olynyk up there.
Shabazz Muhammad. Yes, you're excited.
No, I'm not, unfortunately, yeah, because of exactly what you're saying. Like when I did watch him, I think an accurate comparison is kind of Kilpatrick. I think that's fair, and that doesn't get me that excited. Mike, does it get you that excited?
Well, the thing that because I'm such an Atkinson acolyte, I will get excited if there's like. I'm trying to think of a good player, and I'll think of this for next time, but like someone who's on some good team's bench who becomes a free agent and he just never really got that much run, but the guy that you were always like, that you always sort of enjoyed being out there and you always thought he was up to stuff. If Atkinson could get his hands on that type of player, let's say they overpaid him by $2 million a year, good developmental guy, sort of like what Kent Bazemore was before he got to Atlanta. Not that I love Kent Bazemore, but like that type. I mean, I've watching Kent Bazemore now on the Hawks. He's a pretty good player, and he would help someone like the Nets. If they can find, their goal should be, I guess, not looking for two of the massive restricted free agents in your team just be average. They should try to be finding like that eighth guy on a good bench that they can hopefully get like some, like Jermichael Green or whatever his name is from Memphis. Like there's guys like that that are going to be out there that could get a lot of money, that I would want to trust Atkinson in developing them. But all right, you want to do mail?
Yeah, Mike, you get to do the Cheer Boys this time around.
All right, coming up, Cheer Boy.
No, never mind.
John Lindgren. Is that good?
I'm sorry, John. John, I'm sorry.
John. Question, what do the Nets and cheese have in common? Oh, my God.
Mike, did you write this? I feel like you wrote this in. Making this up.
He says, give up? Knew you guys would. Answer, if left for a while, both will develop culture. Hope you have a great G-R-A-T-E pod. Thank you, John. That's a great way to start. That's pretty funny. John, that's my humor. That's like right.
That's Power Dad right there. That's Power Dad humor.
Yeah. This is from Eric McCray.
You didn't say Cheer Boy, Mike. I'm sorry, Eric. I'm sorry.
Your guy. Eric.
What did he say, Mike?
Hi, guys. Comma. If we were able to draft Justin Jackson from UNC, would you still offer KCP or Porter a max deal? I feel like he could be a very similar player and much cheaper. Thanks. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Eric. So I like Justin Jackson a lot. I think he certainly actually has that Otto Porter vibe to him. I don't know if he could fall all the way down to the Nets. So we sort of talked about this before, but I don't think there's an appetite, Brian, for KCP or Otto Porter from the Nets fandom. I don't think that's out there. I don't think people care or want to see him or either of those guys to really sign with the team. I don't know. What have you been feeling and hearing?
Obviously, the general consensus is that we would be overpaying for it. Now, without that caveat, yeah, I mean, like, of course, everyone would be bowled over by the ability to get one of those guys, but doing so at the right prices, I think. I mean, all of a sudden, these Nets fans have gotten pretty spendthrifty. You know, they're watching their pocketbook. They're thinking long term. Actually, just in general, this launched me in a whole different thing. But just in general, the fandom is incredibly positive on Nets on the message boards and everywhere else. Have you noticed this at all? It just seems like everyone's like in this weird feel good honeymoon period where like you know not all of this is just like you know none of the management have that much to work with and it's like they pretty much can do no wrong at the moment and
it's kind of
brought everyone together a little bit, Mike. You know what I mean?
I feel like it's a weird, it's like we sort of talked about this as the Stockholm syndrome thing, but it's a weird sense of like there's a lot of positivity around the team, I think, created by Marks and Atkinson. Atkinson was one of his greatest qualities that developed this year or that was shown as how positive and sort of relentlessly forward looking he is. Like he after the games, you could see like his face is like right up into his skull, so he's not hiding much.
His face in general is kind of amazing, just like the crags and the crevasses. It's a pretty wild face.
Well, I forget where it was. I think it was in Jackie McMullen's piece about him, but she said that like after every loss, he spends every morning he wakes up being like he's on the treadmill, and that's what he's doing, and he watches the games on the treadmill. And you gotta, I mean, that's a lot of exercise. And apparently he spends more time like you. Yeah.
That's where I watch him.
But there is like this weird sense of like, just the fact that it is so low in terms of assets that every little bit of excitement is blown up, I think, to a much bigger deal. I don't know what it is. It's just,
but here's the thing. This, like, you know, this very conservative too behind it all. It's like the people are like, you know, the vast majority are like, yeah, let's not overpay for Otto Porter, which is when you have so going on, like, you know, that even, the thought that enters your mind shows this like really kind of interesting, you know, belief in what the long-term plans are.
And you know what it is? It's that coming off of the Darren Williams, Paul Pierce, Garnett thing where like, this team just threw away every asset it had to get that sort of crappy super team that developed. Joe Johnson added to that list too. Nets fan base is pretty smart. I think most people realize, some people said at the time, but most people definitely realize now that like that's not the way to build a team. It's not going to work. And everyone's tempering themselves. Everyone's pulling themselves back. And no one's getting irrationally out there and saying, like, we need to do this, this, and this to be competitive. Everyone's just like, oh, yeah, we should probably just slow build. Just a slow build and see how that takes us. Because historically, that's been the way to go about it.
Yeah. What's the next one?
You're ready for your boy, your guy, your man, Zach Breton. Yeah. Zach.
Thanks. Oh, my God, this. Zach Breton.
It's long. But I think I found the gist of it. Here you go. So we're talking about the RFA market. And, you know, Marks has been known to desire KCP, Otto Porter, and maybe Andre Roberson. The two guys that have caught my eye watching the postseason is Joe Ingles and Nikola Mirotic, both quality shooters who would excel in a system like Kenny's and fit current needs. Plus, I don't think either of them are highly valued by their current team, so maybe we can steal them away for less of an overpay than someone like KCP. Or Otto for the max. Would love to know what you guys think. If you have any sneaky targets for the offseason, best Zach Breton.
Joe Ingles is a great one. He kind of, I whenever I watch, as I frequently do, watch a Jazz game, he's always the guy that seems to be doing a lot. And then I look at his like his numbers, you know, for fantasy or whatever, and it's just nothing. Like totally nothing. Or he just has like weird nights where he'll have like six steals and, you know, 4 points, or like, you know, 7 threes and somehow have like 8 points from it early. You know, it's like one of those bizarre players statistically.
And he's just a weird, he's just an odd player on the, I mean, just because of how he looks, he's an odd player on the court. But I was kind of saying like, that's the market that they need to be hitting to actually be successful. Is that like that weird tier of guys who don't look that great? Like, so I don't know if you read this piece today, but Dion Waiters did a Players Tribune thing. Did you read that?
Okay. No.
So it's like startlingly good. It's pretty amazing.
Really?
It addresses sort of the Waiters Island. He's like, yeah, I know about Waiters Island and all the crazy stuff that I apparently do, but I do it because of where I'm from. And this is what, and also there's like, as he's had tragedy in his life, and he talked about that, and it was just like amazing. And I'm not saying this team should have signed Waiters, because Waiters is like the opposite player of what this team would want. But the biggest market to hit is the underappreciated asset, or the previously highly thought of asset that is now underappreciated, and that's the only way this team is going to like hit on anything, is that it, like Kyle Lowry at one point, I mean, he was on Houston and he was not wanted essentially by Houston that much. And
Kyle Lowry is on.
Yeah, but he was on Houston before that. But between before Memphis, but between Memphis and Toronto, there was Houston. So like guys like that are out there. I mean, I don't think this is actually true, but Brandon Knight is like always like the easy sort of go to because he was highly thought of at one point, and now he's just sort of a disaster, and you could probably have him for nothing. This team cannot just be built on like the slow burn of these late first round picks they hope to be accumulating through minor trades, trading a boy on or whatever. Like, they're going to have to like take a risk on a high salary guy that may not be wanted by another team. That's going to have to happen.
Taking a flyer on Joe Ingles though, in place of Joe Harris, feels like a fun no brainer to me. What do you think?
I mean, I don't know why I'm so negative on Joe Harris, but like, I don't care about him. I'm done. I mean, he peaked in preseason. I'm just like
cooled off on him. Real good.
Like a hard cool off, a real hard cool off. Next one coming up is your boy Daniel Shaw. Daniel Shaw.
Daniel.
Favor for me. I actually like the John Cena intro, so play 15 seconds for me, please. Thanks in advance.
Brutal. The worst. We'll do it for you next time around.
So this is more. There's just
I'm feeling
a lot.
Like weirdly protective of my email sphere right now. I'm like, I feel like I have to, feel like you're encroaching on my email sphere.
Okay, so here,
it's fine.
I'm sorry. No, this is a long one. But here's what we got. I'm excited for the Nets' young talent, a coach who will finally put them in the best position to succeed, i.e. Caris LeVert starting at the two, and a GM with the vision and patience, unlike the dumpster fire Knicks organization. Let's talk free agency and keepers. This is the best bet going forward into next season. Lynn Whitehead, Dinwiddie, Caris, Kilpatrick, Goodwin, McDaniels, RHJ, Booker, and Brooke. Anyone not on this list should be traded or cut. He also talks about Milos on paper is the best pure point guard available outside Curry. I imagine means the other Curry, not his brother. Hill is the best defensive point guard, while Jrue Holiday is slightly above Lynn and Teague. I agree that Jrue Holiday is just slightly above Lynn. But he's pushing for Danilo Gallinari, who would fit here, obviously, loves New York, and may not demand that much money. Millsap would cost too much. Millsap is interesting just because, there's two sides of Paul Millsap. Is the one of that, like, he probably wants to go to contender, and he could be that sort of David West type who goes to a contender and, gets paid $5 million a year but comes off the bench and looks awesome. Or the Nets could pay him max, and he becomes, like, veteran leader extraordinaire. He loves Kenny Atkinson. I don't think it's impossible to think that the Nets are going to get a meeting with Millsap. Even if it doesn't produce anything, I think that could be a potential. It could be something that if they get a meeting with him, there's a shot that they could just say, hey, we're going to give you all the money in the world. And then you have Brook Lopez and Paul Millsap, Jeremy Lin, Caris LeVert, and then whatever else they have. That's not terrible. But you probably would not want Millsap, I'm sure.
Me personally? I mean, I love Millsap. As you say, like, I mean, we're in an interesting spot with that. It's because, like, where we are financially, we're sort of made to give guys like him more money than they're worth. I would be more comfortable giving him a large contract versus Otto Porter or KCP. I don't know. Maybe that's incredibly hot take. Maybe that's a scorching hot take that I'll regret, but I just feel like the talent is more proven and it's more adaptable. Like, I always feel like if a guy, there's players that move from team to team and their skill set just falls off a cliff.
Yeah.
And oftentimes that happens with the Nets. What if Millsap moving from Utah to Atlanta made a seamless transition, didn't skip a beat and got better in the process. That says a lot to me just in terms of the sort of adaptability and resilience of a player going forward.
And I don't think this, even though what Mark said about like they don't want to be maxed out and be a 35 win team, I don't think that should take them out of the running of paying someone like Millsap. It's unrealistic that they would, and it's unrealistic that he would come here. But like, to me, that would be one of the smarter moves just because, again, good guy vibes, fits in what they want to do. Atkinson knows what he is. and he would just fit beautifully next to a three-point shooting Brook Lopez. And he's a better rebounder than Brook, so you can mix it around.
What do you think the chances are that he's just a closet Teodosic freak, just loves Teodosic and wants to play them? What do you think?
Paul Millsap?
Yeah.
Here's one guy I like to lavish a lot of money on.
Yeah.
Patty Mills. Unrestricted free agent. Oh, yeah. I could see. I mean, I know Marks is what, from New Zealand? Patty Mills is from Australia. There's a connection there. This team, he's a guy that could play off ball. Every time I see him play, he seems better than Tony Parker at this point. But he's probably not going to leave the Spurs culture. I mean, I just think there's like a couple of dudes out there. I mean, Kelly Olynyk, I'm never going to like love. I'm just not going to do it. Just never enjoyed a second of Kelly Olynyk.
A little Hooterite.
You want to do a killer comparison?
Sure, let it rip. So Mike actually came up with this. He's a genius. I think we really did well here. Enjoyed this one. So basically, the thrust of this one is that Mike took a long look at the playoff matchups and devised this crazy scheme to compare each of the matchups to like a film, if you're going to watch them, like a movie film, and just going to draw these comparisons and you know, tweet at us at who's incorrect. I mean, I have all the right answers, Mike. I'll tell you what's what when we get there. But do you want me to just start it off?
Tell me which series you did, and then we'll kind of mix and match. Did you?
I did them all.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, you start off. You tell me where you want to go, and then I'll follow.
Let's start with the East Coast, and let's just do one to, you know, starting with the 1-8 Celtics and Bulls. This is an odd one for me. I think everyone came into it with a certain expectation, and then it got kind of sad, and it's a weird series right now.
Emotionally, true. Yeah.
Just watching it, there's a lot of like weird, serious energy, and it's all like very tragic and sad and stuff. So I kind of went with Million Dollar Baby on this one, just in that you will go into it expecting one thing and you're getting something so totally different, and the vibe is weird. And
I think that's perfect. I mean, you're thinking slightly uplifting sports movie. It is not that. Million Dollar Baby's kind of like a pretty good movie. This series has been pretty good. like not amazing, but yeah, that's, I think I was going to say something like some Boston connection, but not in terms of entertainment value, but like Argo. I think everyone was surprised. I think going into it, when you're finding out that Ben Affleck's directing a movie about some hostage crisis, you're like, I don't know how that's going to turn out. And this turned out to be pretty good. This series has been the most compelling first round series, I think, so far. Maybe you could say Utah Clippers, but like, to be honest, I mean, West Coast series, people don't watch basketball. So
I think that's fair. I mean, I would have gone The Town, you know, personally, or no, I don't know. Did you ever watch The Town?
Yeah, The Town's pretty fantastic.
I like that.
There was rumors, and there's pretty much confirmation that Ben Affleck was gonna direct the next Batman movie. That's been taken off the table, apparently. I know his last movie, Live by Night, did not do well. I think that's because dude was too bulky to be believed as a like 40 style gangster. He still had that Batman weight, and that Batman weight did not look good in a three-piece suit.
They were in Batman size back in the 40s.
I don't think everyone just like crushed like steel cages like Batman did back in the day. Next series. What is the next series? Is that Cavs Pacers?
Yeah, Cavs Pacers. Shoot.
All right. So I this one was tough, but what I said was the series was a slog. It was boring, predictable, but yet not uninteresting. Okay.
I feel like you missed the series. When we did a podcast and we were going into game three, you were somehow convinced that the Pacers were exposing all these weaknesses or whatever in the Cavs, or You've been all over the map with the series. Let me just say that.
I'm right in both senses. I think this was a predictable, slightly interesting series that was boring, but yet I also think it's ridiculous that the Cavs had so much trouble with the Pacers. I mean, they did. I think pretty much every game except for maybe one was close. The Pacers had shots to win all three of those games that were close, if not all four. I'm just down on the Cavs, man. I'm down on the Cavs.
Give me the movie.
All right, I said Lincoln. Lincoln. Slow, boring movie, but yet not uninteresting.
Okay, so I have a different reaction just to start from the Cavs and Pacers. I've been way more interested in that series than I'd been to be, just because, I mean, like, that game three was incredible, and all the games have been, like, pretty compelling towards the end. Not in the long run, like, you know what's going to happen, of course, and so there's not going to be any surprises, but still pretty compelling when you're sitting down and watching. Is that fair?
That's fair.
I went with Titanic on this. I went with Titanic. You know what's going to happen. I have no reason to be as entertained by this as I am a grown man, but every time it's on TV, I'll sit down and watch Titanic. You know, like, I'm...
So you enjoy the movie Titanic?
Yeah, when it's on, I watch it, you know? If that's enjoyment, then yeah, I guess it's enjoyment. Yeah,
I think that's the definition of enjoyment.
Sure.
I'm not, like, trying to say, like, I'm a man because I'm not a man, but Titanic has never done it for me. I've just never been there with it.
Lincoln's just an empirically great film. So we're gonna disagree along the way. Sure. Because you have terrible taste in things, and so that's gonna be a hurdle we'll get over, though.
I'm fine with that. Next one, Toronto Bucks. What did you say?
So this one I've been incredibly enthralled by. I've been trying to watch it as often as I can. I really like the Bucks just in general. I think it's super fun to watch that team. I like that they're doing something different stylistically, and all the players are kind of bizarre. And that they're finally thriving a little bit at least earlier on they were having some success. Can you believe, like, how often is, like, when Chris Middleton was like really playing well last season, have you seen a team where there's like three legit 20-point scorers? And I mean, Jabari is obviously out now, but like their future could, like, they kind of are almost underrated in the, like, great future squads right now, don't you think? I don't know.
They know they are, but the problem is that the team got better when Jabari was out. So it's like, it's tough to put Jabari in that. Jabari needs to be in that future, but the team is better without him. I mean, it has been. It just so.
Yeah.
It's like you want to believe that, okay, you have Giannis, which is just like the total freak, like Kevin Garnett 2.0, but even better. And then you have Jabari, who will just be like a reliable Paul Pierce type scorer. But they didn't really mesh all that well together. And they're both should be small ball fours. So it is interesting to see what they're going to do this offseason, because there's a shot that Jabari gets flipped. But I do think, like, if you flip Jabari for some, I don't know, some pretty good point guard, and you give a point guard who can shoot, I mean, they should actually be going after Patty Mills, because if they get just a ball handler who can shoot to go with Giannis and Middleton and whatever, you know, Thon Maker at center, that's like a super tough, difficult team to beat. What's your movie?
Well, I also want to, like, the Raptors, I feel like is a weird team, but I'm enjoying them like having difficulty in the first round, as I always do with Toronto. I just don't like that team. Anyways, but the whole thing's been very compelling for me. So I went with District 9. I just went with just because it's, whenever it's on, I watch it, and I'm very fond of it, and it's odd, and yeah, I don't know. It's a weird comparison. What did you get?
All right, I went a different way here. I went so this was a tough one, but I started with, do you see the movie The Intern with De Niro and Anne Hathaway? Just came out like last year.
Of course I did not see that movie. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
You saw that?
Yeah, the movie is effective. It is an effective Well done movie. Okay. But my, but my reasoning for it was, like the series, the movie starts out with this young upstart in Anne Hathaway, and you believing that Anne Hathaway is going to basically be, Meryl Streep from Devil Wears Prada, but a little messier. Okay. And you're thinking like, oh, this is going to be a powerful woman and she's going to teach Robert De Niro a thing or two. Robert De Niro is similar to Kyle Lowry, grumpy, shorter, a veteran. But in fact, as the series has turned, so did the movie. The movie, the intern turned, and De Niro, you're like, wow, no, De Niro's teaching the lessons. De Niro is not actually the intern. The actual intern is Anne Hathaway. And Kyle Lowry is teaching Giannis Antetokounmpo lessons about playoff basketball. And that's what's happening here.
That's exactly what I gleaned from that, just based on the trailer. Like, that was a plot twist for you is amazing.
It's not a plot twist, but that's what the movie is. That's the plot of the movie.
I know, but that surprised you. That's like pretty much the trailer. It's like De Niro comes in with his like old guy ways, and he's like, "You guys need to start tucking your shirts in and shit, or things like that." And then they do, and then they're better off for it. That's disappointing to me that didn't come across for you. That you were surprised by that element.
No, you're not, Brian. You're not getting it. The movie. I'm saying that. Of course, that's the movie, and that was what the series was. The series started off as the movie did, which is the younger is going to teach the older, but in fact, the older are teaching the younger.
That's, yeah, I know, Mike. That's what was clear.
You're not getting it. You're not getting it. You're just not getting it, Brian.
Tweet at us. Who's getting it?
All right, let's do a couple of quicker ones. Wizard Talks.
Let's go. Wizard Talks. For me, I hate to say this, Mike. I'm just not interested in the series. Hate to say it. It's on. I feel like every time I turn the channel, I'm watching Wiz Hawks. It's every time I'm on TNT, I got this. So for me, it's like The Hobbit, Desolation of Smog. Always on TNT. Never want to watch it. I'm sorry.
Sorry. It's pretty perfect. Again, I'm going different here. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going with the plot of the series, Brian, matching the plot of the movie. This is not a comparison in terms of greatness of series. I will do that later on, but I'm just saying plot. Okay. As a Wizards fan, this series started out for me like the movie Boogie Nights started out. Wow. How awesome is this? This is so much fun. The porn industry in the 70s. What a great time.
Yeah.
Then we switch decades, aka switch venues.
Mm-hmm.
Things go downhill, and it's been once the series moved to Atlanta, this thing just went downhill. So Boogie Nights, it's Boogie Nights to me.
Good. I like it.
Thanks, buddy. West Coast.
Warriors Blazers. For me, this is the special combination it's both popular and horrible to watch, and I hate everything about it.
Love that.
I just don't. I've gone full into just hating the Wizards. The Warriors outright.
Wow.
So for me, it's when it happened for me, but I finally got to the place where it's like, yep, I just don't like this team. And so for me, it's like any of the Adam Sandler Netflix movies, like actively repelled by it. So I'm going to watch so much more Warriors going down the deepener into the playoffs. They're just going to be around forever, and I'm just like, I don't ever need to watch Warriors first round series again, I don't think.
Sure. I like that. What I've got is, so I basically tried to find a movie that, and I would like your opinion on this too, a movie where there was a great performance in it, but yet the movie was bad. Okay. Cause this series, of course the Warriors are having a great performance. But the series is
Scarface?
Bad.
Is that
Scarface is good. So I think Scarface would be, I had another Pacino movie on here. So it was like, I can't go like all Pacino all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this movie. You see the movie Joy with Jennifer Lawrence?
When did you sit down and watch all these?
I get the screeners, man. I get the screeners for my union. And
no, I didn't. I missed Joy.
Okay, so it's Jennifer. The movie's messy. It's a David O. Russell movie. It's not that good. But Jennifer Lawrence, pretty damn effective. Pretty good performance. But I think Scarface is probably better.
Spurs Grizzlies. What do you got?
Spurs Grizzlies. So,
I've got a great answer for this. Do you want to hear?
Yeah, give it to me.
I actually came up with this, and I didn't even think about the fact that this is an obvious, not even a pun. It's just right on the nose. I went Grizzly Man, and Grizzly Man, the documentary about Timothy Treadwell, by Werner Herzog. So, the reason that I did that was because, you know, Werner Herzog movies, everyone respects them, you know, likes them. They're very similar to one another. There's like a very concrete, aesthetic that he uses for everything that he does. But Grizzly Man is like, for whatever reason, like super fun and really entertaining to watch. Whereas a lot of the other things, slightly more of an academic experience, which is what this Spurs Grizzlies matchup has been. Like, that's on paper, a matchup I don't want anything to do with. Super, super familiar, just in a way that, like, you know, I don't, how many of these are I'm going to watch, but suddenly Mike Conley is like incredibly fun to watch. And Kawhi Leonard is like finally in like give me game ball mode. And like, that's been amazing. Like, that's been a totally different looking team in the playoffs. And they're just like feed Kawhi the ball in the fourth quarter, and he's playing hero ball on Spurs, which is like a bizarre thing you never see. It's great. I mean, the whole thing's been awesome.
That's beautiful. I agree. I mean, the only parts of the series that I really ever watched was that stretch. It was the last game of the fourth quarter where, like, Kawhi was just out of his mind. And you're right. You don't – I mean, even with Duncan, it wasn't like just feed him. He was never feed me the ball, Duncan. I mean, he would do it, but, like, Kawhi was just next level awesome stuff.
Yeah.
All right, I love that.
Yeah, thanks.
Next one, what is it? Clippers – or is it – no, Thunder Rockets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is my favorite one. This is the one I pitched to you. I thought it was the best one I did. This series is defined by its two stars going head-to-head, battling for not only the series, but the president of the usage rate club. So what I did here was Heat with De Niro and Pacino. Two titans at the top of their game, but really, like Harden, De Niro has better players around him. So the movie... I don't know. Who won Heat? Pacino had more action in the movie, but De Niro won Heat. I mean, he
won it.
Like he won the movie. He had Val Kilmer around him and Tom Sizemore, which are, if Val Kilmer is, you know, Ryan Anderson, Tom Sizemore is Eric Gordon. I mean, that's obvious. Everyone knows that.
Sure.
So two Titans going at it. On screen, on the court, but one of them is winning definitely, and it was De Niro. And after that movie, the decade follows that, where De Niro just keeps winning and Pacino falls off.
Great. So, I'm not even gonna mess with that. Let's move right on to Clippers Utah. Put a fine point on this. What do you got?
I didn't really get. I couldn't figure out this because my hate for the Clippers is so much.
This is incredibly hard for me. I went Children of Men just because like.
Well, okay, I want to hear this.
I've never seen Children of Men, and I haven't watched a single game of this series. I recognize that it's probably a good-ish series, or at least it was until Blake Griffin went down, but for some reason, I just, like, I'm never going to see it. I'm never going to watch it. I'm just not going to do it. And I want to see Children of Men, I guess, but I just haven't done it. I don't know. I don't know what's keeping me from doing it.
I think that makes all the sense in the world. And and you should watch Children of Men, because it's amazing.
It's good, right?
All right, so we did it. That was Killer Comparison, and if you're listening to us on Dash Radio at noon and 8 on Wednesdays, Brian, thank you for listening. If you're listening to us on our podcast, thank you for listening to that as well. We're here. This is the Glue Guys. Brian, say goodbye.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. Take care. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for listening.